Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is September the 7th, and we are in Sefer Yonah. This is our second class, and we are up to the second chapter, Perek Beis. And we are up to Yonah in the not in the fish, in the ocean. He's about to get swallowed by the fish, and there he will dive into Hashem. Right? This is going to be the chapter, the parak of Silas Yonah, the prayer of Yonah. We are going to do Mitzvah Hashem the entire chapter tonight. It is 11 psukim, 11 verses, of which 8 of them are his prayer. So the pasuk says, we'll read it through completely first, and then we'll go back and take it apart slowly. The pasuk says, "Vayaman Hashem dog gadol livlo aes Yonah." Hashem designated or sent a large fish to swallow Yonah. It was not a whale. That is apocryphal. A large fish. A large fish swallowed Yonah. Vayhi Yonah bimei hadog. Yonah was in the innards of the dog, of the fish. For 3 days and three nights. If you're wondering how could he survive inside of the stomach of a fish for 3 days and three nights, that's a very good question. We will deal with that. Yonah davened to Hashem, his God, from the innards of the fish. Notice that it used to say dug, fish. Now it says daga, also means fish. What's the difference between dug and daga? Okay, dog is male, dogga is female. So first it was a male fish, now it's a female fish. What happened? Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomer, this is the text of his prayer. Vayomer, Karasi mitzara li, I called out from my tzara, from my trial, my pain, El Hashem to Hashem vayaneni, and he answered me. Mi beten sheol shivati, from the Bethan means stomach, so it means from the innards of the depths. Sheol can mean a grave, or it can mean something very deep. Shivati, I called out. Shamata koli, you heard my voice. It's a very poetic prayer, as most prayers are in Tanakh. Vatashlichini mitzula b'lovav yamim, you sent me into the waters in the heart of the ocean. V'nahar yisavaveni, and the river surrounds me. Kol mishbarecha v'galecha alai avaru, all of your waves. Mishbarecha v'galecha are two different words for waves. I think they say over there breakers and waves, which is the same thing as saying two words for waves. So it's all of your waves passed over me. V'ani amati, and I said, nigrashti mineged einecha, I have been chased away from before your eyes. That's what I thought. Ach osif lehabit, however, I will continue to see el echal kodshecha, the sanctuary, your holy sanctuary. Afafuni mayim ad nefesh, water has surrounded me until my soul, which means that it was about to kill me. I was about to drown. Tehom yisovaveni, I was surrounded by the depths. Suf chavush l'roshi, the ocean was like a bind over my head. It held me down. L'kitzvei harim yoradati, to the foundations of the mountains I went down. Ha'aretz b'richeha ba'adi li'olam, the land was a bar against me forever. V'atal mishachas chayai, and you brought up from destruction my life. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God. B'yisatef alai nafshi, when my soul was literally this means folded over on me, but it means when I felt like I was about to die. As Hashem zacharti, I remembered Hashem. V'atavo elecha tfilasi, and my prayer came to you, el heichal kodshecha, to your holy sanctuary. Mishamrim havlei shav, those who guard or hold on to their false hevel means nothingness. What's that?
It says folly.
Folly, okay, their false folly. Chasdam ya'azovu, they will leave their that which gives them kindness. Vani and I bekol todah es bechalach, in with the sound of thanksgiving, I will sacrifice to you. Ashen adarti ashalema, that which I vowed, I will pay, I will do. Yeshua salah Hashem, saved by Hashem. That's the end of his prayer. We will go through it carefully to understand what he means to be saying. Vayomer Hashem ladog, Hashem said to the fish, Vayakei es Yonah el hayabasha, and he spat out Yonah onto the dry land. Okay, it goes back to being a male fish. Okay. So Yonah was thrown into the ocean. What did Yonah expect to happen to him when he was thrown into the ocean? He would die. He'd be drowned in the ocean, which would have been the appropriate punishment for Yonah. For Yonah had disobeyed Hashem. How did he disobey Hashem? He did not do what Hashem said, which was to go to Nineveh and say the prophecy that he was told to say. Even though he had not actually received the prophecy, but he knew that that was Hashem's command. A Navi, a prophet that does not say prophecy that he was told to say, the punishment is death by the hand of God. And as we pointed out last week, he didn't yet violate that command because he wasn't yet told what to say. He was told, go to Nineveh, and there I will tell you what to say. And since he didn't go to Nineveh yet, so he wasn't told what to say, so he didn't actually violate the word of Hashem yet. But still, Yonah being on the level that he was, he certainly was playing with fire over here. He was right on the verge of that, of disobeying Hashem. He deserved to die, at least that's what he thought. And he assumed he would be drowned.
Did he see the door at this time when he said this to her? Because some of the Lashon is almost the same Lashon.
It's definitely Ruach HaKodesh. Whether it was Nevor or not, I can't tell you. It certainly is a prophecy that it's written in the book of Yonah. That's certainly true. Who wrote the book of Yonah is a good question. Not necessarily Yonah. Now, when he's in the water, so he's about to drown, how long does a person last underwater? Not that long. How long can he hold his breath? So we're talking in the first couple of minutes of being underwater, Yonah is then swallowed by a large fish, which is strange, a strange thing to happen. And unless the fish is carnivorous, in which case it should have bitten him up, if it wasn't a carnivorous fish, certainly it would be unusual to be swallowed. But whatever it is, he was swallowed by the fish, he was swallowed whole by the fish. And he goes down into the innards of the fish, the stomach of the fish.
Why you say it was not a whale? Is it?
Only because it doesn't have, what I mean to say is it doesn't have to be a whale. If it was a whale, it would be a rather small whale. It wasn't this large.
But it could be.
Yeah. But this is not Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
But that would be pretty big, though, wouldn't it, for him to swallow him whole?
Yes, it has to be a large fish, yeah. But it could be any fish that is that large.
But we don't know what kind of fish.
It doesn't say.
It sounded like, though, when you were first explaining it, you totally ruled it out that it wasn't.
Yeah, I just meant that the picture people have of this whale,
yeah,
you know,
a whale.
That, which, you know, it was a fish, whatever the fish was. We don't know, you know, what kind of fish it was. He's in the fish. Now he's in the innards of the fish. Now what ought to happen to any object in the stomach of a living creature? Well, one of two things is going to happen. Either it'll be digested or it'll be vomited. It shouldn't be able to just sit in the stomach. So the Medrash says over here that really he would have been digested by the fish. But Hashem kept the fish sustained using something that kept Yonah from being digested, meaning he gave the fish something to eat other than normal food. And Hashem gave him something other than normal food. And the hint to what he gave the fish is in the first word of the parak, of the chapter. Vayeman. So the Medrash says that Hashem, this is an enormous fish, a large fish, it took a lot of food to sustain the fish. Hashem gave the fish 16 portions of man. Vav Yud, the first two letters of that word, Vayeman, Vav Yud, is six, the very first word in the Torah. Vav Yud is 16, vav is 6, yod is 10. That's 16 mun. 16 mun. 16 portions of mun were fed to this fish. Hashem gave the fish 16 portions of mun, which sustained the fish, and it also sustained Yonah. Yonah had to eat too. Well, the mun came down into the fish's stomach, and Yonah was able to eat from the mun. Yonah didn't eat as much as the fish ate. And since it was 3 days, so you needed mun to sustain both the fish and Yonah. That is what the Medrash says. So Yonah is in the stomach of this fish, and he is not being digested, and he is eating mun. Now, he does not daven to Hashem. It's not for 3 days and three nights that he davens to Hashem. Not until 3 days and three nights pass that he davens to Hashem. So, what is Yonah thinking down here in the fish? But let me tell you more than that. The Medrash says an amazing thing. Obviously, this is miraculous. That Yonah was able to see out of the fish. Yonah was able to see through the eyes of the fish, the Medrash says. It says that the eyes of the fish were like windows for Yonah, and he was able to see where he was. Now, one can ask a very good question, which even if the eyes were like windows, it's very dark down there. That's a good question. The Medrash doesn't address that. But the Medrash says that what I imagine the Medrash means is that just as the fish is able to see underwater, Yonah was given the ability to see through the eyes of the fish. And he was able to see where he was. As we will see when we move through the Tefillah of Yonah, we'll see that he was able to pick out very specific places where he was underwater. So Yonah is there, he's eating mun, he's not being digested, clearly miraculous. He's able to see through the eyes of the fish where he is, clearly miraculous. So Yonah is living a miraculous life down there, eating mun in the innards of the fish, seeing through the eyes of the fish. And Yonah does not daven to get out of the fish. He remains where he is. And how do we understand that? What is he thinking? Then it says in Pasuk Beis, verse 2, "Vayispalel Yonah el Hashem elokav mimei hadaga." Hashem Yonah davened to Hashem as God from the innards of the fish. And we pointed out it switches from a male fish to a female fish. So the Gemara says that initially Yonah was swallowed by a male fish, and there was room in the male fish, but then he was swallowed by a female fish. And the female fish was pregnant with several different fetuses. And it got very crowded for Yonah down there. Now, that suggests that this is a fish that does not lay eggs, or perhaps it's a fish that does lay eggs, but the eggs had not yet been laid. They were being developed inside the fish. Be that as it may, Yonah is in the fish. And the point is, the difference between the male fish and the female fish, if he went from being not crowded to being very crowded. And that's when he decided to daven to Hashem. The simple understanding of that chazal, of those words of our sages, is that Yonah didn't daven to Hashem until things got pretty bad for him. As long as he was living okay, without too much trouble, he was eating mun, he could see through, got a nice view, a nice little excursion there, and he's able to move around inside the fish, he didn't daven. But once things got a little too troublesome for him, that he couldn't move, then he davened.
Did he have the mud in the female fish?
Yes, yeah. Well, he didn't die. He didn't get digested.
But you know,
Chazal only point out that he got cramped. Doesn't say that he was in fear of being digested or of starving.
By adding the hay, it's a sign also that Hashem is there, right? Isn't that a symbol for that?
Possibly, but this is what Chazal tells us.
Could we think that even that's a sign of mercy?
It's possible.
The mother is a merciful.
It's possible. Okay, you're saying switching from a male to a female would imply some sort of mercy. Could be.
To go pray.
It's interesting. Yeah.
The male fish for the mat and the female fish for the father?
The simple understanding is that the male fish spit him directly into the mouth of the female fish. However, the Malbim understands that he was spit out into the ocean. And now, not when he was first in the ocean, he was dropped from the boat into the ocean. So he's towards the top. Now he was spit out way down in the depths of the ocean. And there again he was drowning, and then the female fish swallowed him. That's the way the Malbim understands it. We'll show why the Malbim understands it that way. Yeah.
Well, I have read that whales swallow things that are not, they won't swallow items,
mm-hmm.
and that they don't digest them, but then they do spew them out.
Okay.
Regurgitate the foreign object. So is that
possible? It's possible. We don't have to say that. I mean, it says Hashem brought the fish, so it could be. Yeah.
I don't know any fish that carries its eggs or babies near its eyes. That's the problem I'm having. So how does it see through the eyes at one point?
I don't think
this fish and be crowded in another.
He was clearly in the stomach of the fish. It says he was in the stomach of the fish.
But he saw through the eyes.
So whatever that means, Hashem, I mean, even if he was in the head of the fish, it doesn't make sense they saw through the eyes, right?
Well, the eyes are transparent.
Yeah, but I'm saying whatever that means. What is he? You know, where is his head? His head is in the cranium of the fish. It just doesn't.
That's what I've been having trouble.
Yeah, so whatever it means, he was able to see what the fish could see. That's what it seems like. The Chazal is saying.
Is it possible that the eyes are representative of some kind of awakening that Jonah was having?
It could be. It could be.
Where he was and what he had done.
It could be.
Very hard to understand.
Go ahead. Thank
you.
Thank you. Okay, that's what we have to understand.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we understand.
Once he davened, and again he has Hashem blessing him there at that point, comes back to the male fish.
Yeah, it seems like he went in reverse order. He went from the female fish back to the male fish, then out into the dry land. But what's he doing for 3 days? Yeah.
You know, an interesting thing is that fish, the animals that can change gender.
Okay. So maybe that's what happened.
So I wonder if in some kind of fish. So does Chazal say anything about it being maybe the same fish?
They don't say that, but maybe that's what it means. They say that the male fish spit it into a female fish. Spit him into a female fish. Mm-hmm. But maybe it means that, you know, maybe that's what it means. You know, it's figurative. I don't know. But what's he doing for 3 days in this fish? What is he thinking?
He's enjoying himself.
Well, see, it's hard to believe he's enjoying himself. See, you know, Yonah is not happy right now. Yonah was running away from Hashem. He knows what's going on over here. He knows that, I mean, part of the statement that he's going to say is, I thought I was being chased away from before your eyes, from before you, Hashem. So Yonah knows that he's done something wrong. But remember, Yonah justified it because he felt that it was the right thing to do to protect the Jewish people, like we learned last week, not to go to Nineveh. So he is trying to avoid Hashem. He's willing to lose his life for this. He's thrown overboard, and he's willing to lose his life. So he, as far as he's concerned, better to die than to go to Nineveh and ask them to do teshuva and run the risk of them doing teshuva and making the Jews look bad. He'd rather die than hurt his fellow Jews. As we said last week, Yonah has an intense love for his fellow Jews. So that's what he's willing to do. But Hashem won't let him die. He gets swallowed by the fish. So what is he thinking? So Yonah, when he's over there under the oceans, in the depths of the oceans, and he's swallowed by the fish, and he's just sitting there, being sustained on mud. What do you do in a fish down there? I mean, you can't play golf. What do you do down there? So Yonah is there doing nothing. He's doing nothing. He could have been learning Torah in his head, but that's about it. So his needs were taken care of. He was being fed. He had shelter. His needs were okay. He wasn't in pain. He had room to move in that first fish. So he can still live. He could have lived for years like that. He could have lived until 120 and died. No one would have known anything about it. They would have thought he died when he got thrown overboard. And that's it. So what is the difference between Yonah up on earth and Yonah down inside the fish? He's still living. he's still able to daven if he chose to, which he didn't. He can still learn Torah, which he might have. So what is the difference? What is the main difference between Yonah in the fish and Yonah on dry land?
Can't move.
He can move it.
Maybe he has charata, first of all, where he didn't regret. But he doesn't feel he's meritorious enough to even daven. Like, who am I to daven to Hashem? I just started running away.
Okay, that's possible. Could be he didn't feel it was worthy of it.
But also, they are starting to have charata.
Could be. But I want to answer the question. What's the difference between Yonah living a full life in the fish, where his needs are taken care of, and he can simply be involved in spiritual matters, almost like being in Gan Eden? I mean, he didn't have to worry about food, didn't have to worry about clothing, didn't have to worry about shelter, didn't have to worry about working for a living. He's in the fish. He can daven if he wants. He can learn Torah if he wants. He's just in the fish. What's the difference between Yonah in the fish and Yonah out of the fish? Say it again. Okay, Hashem is not trying to give in a vote. That is correct. What's that?
He
couldn't go, but there's a major fundamental difference between life in the fish and life out of the fish.
He has no responsibility, he has no relationship, he's by himself.
Okay, he has no responsibilities and no, say it again, with
anybody.
He does with Hashem.
With
people. The only difference between life in the fish and life out of the fish is people. He could live 120 years in the fish. He could still be there. Hashem could give him life for thousands of years. He could be swimming around down there. No one would know. No one would care. It wouldn't matter to us because he's down there and we're up here. He's not in the world with people. It's like going into outer space and living in outer space all by yourself. If all your needs are taken care of, you can live, but you can't interact with people. He's by himself. It's like being on a desert island alone with nobody. That's Yonah's experience. And for 3 days, that's how he lived. And for all he knew, that could have gone on forever. Yonah, for those first 3 days in the fish, assumes that this is his fate. Because he did not go to the people to warn them like Hashem told him to. Yonah thought he'd be killed for that. He wasn't killed for it. So Yonah now assumes, this is my fate. Because I did not go, therefore I have been banished from people. Because Hashem is not killing me, he's going to give me a life of solitary confinement. Because I did not interact with people the way I should have. That is where he is. Whether he didn't daven because, as was suggested, he didn't feel worthy to daven, he felt like, okay, that's it, I sinned and I'm stuck, or whether he didn't daven because he felt that he didn't want to daven because he didn't want to get out, because if he got out, he would have to go to Nineveh, and he doesn't want to do that, I'm not sure. But whatever it is, for those first 3 days, he believes that this is his fate. He will be here until Hashem decides that his life is over. That's what he thinks. But then Hashem has the big fish, the male fish, with a lot of room, spit him into a female fish with less room. And now not only is he in the fish, not only does he have no interaction with people, but now he's in pain. Now he's cramped. And so he realizes Hashem is not done with him. Hashem could have killed him in the water if Hashem wanted to kill him. Hashem could have just left him in solitary confinement for the rest of his life. But clearly Hashem is trying to get him to do something because Hashem moved him from one place to another. If this was to be his fate in solitary confinement, leave him there. What are you switching him to another fish, which is more cramped? Evidently, there's more to this fish than just remaining there. And that is when Yonah begins to daven. And the Mefarshim add that, as we will see, one of the places that he sees through the fish, remember, he's seeing everything underneath, he's down in the water, so he's seeing places, he's seeing the places, the foundations of the land underneath the land. The fish goes under the continents, the fish goes into the tahom, the depths. That's not the ocean. It actually goes down into the watery area underneath the land. And it is from there that Yonah is able to see the, as it says he's able to see the foundations of the mountains and things of that nature. One of the things that he knows is that he is beneath the place of the Beis HaMikdash. That's one of the places that he goes. And when he sees that, and he is in this female fish with the pain that he's going through, that's when he davens. When he realizes that he is now underneath the area of the Beis HaMikdash, he says, Hashem will hear my prayer. And so he davens after 3 days and three nights in the fish. I'll take a few questions, but we cannot get back down. We have a lot more to do tonight. Yes?
One of the things that stands out to me is that what's the difference between where he is and where he was is that he's unable to run away. He was running. Now he can't run, so he has only one thing that he can do besides praying. But praying is part of it. He has to face himself and face what he's done.
So I agree with you that the solitary confinement was so that he would think about it, and evidently Hashem felt that after being in that fish, he ought to arrive at the conclusion that he should daven. But when he didn't, so Hashem put him in the other fish, which would then get him to daven. But that's what Hashem wanted from him. Hashem was not interested in leaving him there for his whole life.
More isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Than ever.
So Yonah davened. Let's go through what he says. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomer, and he said, Karasi mitzara li el Hashem. I called out from the pain that I had to Hashem. Vaya'aneini, and he answered me. The Mefarshim understand this to mean, I am confident that he will answer me. Mibeten sheol shivati, from the innards of the grave, from the depths, I called out. Shamata koli, you heard my voice, which again is taken to mean I know you will hear my voice. I know Hashem, you will hear my voice. Now I want you to take note of the word mibeten sheol from the, how do they translate it there? Mibeten sheol, belly of the lower world. We're going to come back to that phrase as soon as we go a little bit further. We'll come back to that phrase. It's a critical phrase in this prayer. Vatashlicheni mitzula bilvav yamim. You sent me into the waters of the heart of the ocean. Vinaharya Silvavani, and the river will surround me. This river is a little bit difficult to understand because he's in the ocean. So what river are we talking about? So some of Farshim say the river here just means because all the rivers empty eventually into the ocean. That's where rivers go. As the Pasuk says in Kohelet, Kol HaNechalim Holchim El Hayam, all the rivers go to the ocean. So that's all it means over here, that in addition to ocean water, there's also river water in the ocean. Okay, that's possible. And the other explanation I saw is that this is the ocean that is in this, excuse me, this is the river that's in the ocean. Whether it means a strong current, like the Gulf Stream or something like that, but it's some sort of a river that finds itself in the ocean. What's the word?
Phrase?
Yeah, the science of ocean. Yeah, they have discovered that it's not really a river, but they have found that there are currents, but very specific ones, different than the Gulf Stream, like very specific on the bottom of the ocean, that there are these what you would only describe as rivers, these flows of water that seem to be one flow of something along the river. So perhaps it means something like that. Kol mishvarecha v'galecha alai avaru, all of your waves passed over me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I only understood it means that maybe he didn't pray, but that when he was first in the ocean and he thought he was drowning, that he prayed that Hashem answered him by having his fish swallow him.
Well, it doesn't seem that the way that Mefarshim explained it, the Malbim says it, and others, that he's describing what happened to him when he fell into the water the first time, but not that he davened then. Now in the fish, he is reviewing what happened. I was in the water. I was gonna drown, and then he's describing how all the water is surrounding him. And then Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Vani amarti nigrashti mineged panecha. I thought, I said that I was chased away from before your eyes. In other words, I was going to drown. Ach osif lehabit elichal katshecha. But I continue to see the your holy sanctuary, meaning that I see that you saved me. You had the fish swallow me up to save me. It is from this verse that I, what it says, I continue to see your holy sanctuary, that Chazal understand that he was able to see the place where above him he knew the Beis HaMikdash was. Now Pasuk Vav, verse 6, goes back to being surrounded by water, which is why the Malbim understands that when he went from the male female fish to the from the male fish to the female fish, he was first in the water again, and he was threatened with drowning. Afafuni mayim ad nefesh, the water surrounded me until my soul, I was ready to drown. Tahom yisovaveni, the depths surrounded me. Suf chavush l'roshi, suf comes from the Yam Suf, the Red Sea. That's what Suf is. Chazal say that he was in the place where the water had split for the Jews when they left Egypt. He was down there, but only he was there when there was water there. The Jews were there when there wasn't. He was down there on the bottom where it actually split. He saw the place where the Jews walked on dry land. Suf, Chavush L'Roshi, the Suf, the Yam Suf, the Red Sea, was like a barrier over my head. L'Kitzvei Harim Yaradati, I went down to the foundations of the mountains. They say that what is the tallest mountain on earth? So the tallest mountain on earth is the island of Hawaii. So they say. Hawaii is a volcanic mountain that goes down to the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. And it is way, way, way taller than Mount Everest. That's what they say. So that is perhaps what it means over here, that he sees the foundations of the mountains. Ha'aretz b'richeha v'adi le'olam. The land is a bar, a gate, a b'riach means a bolt in front of me forever, meaning I thought that I was stuck down here forever. V'atal mishachas chaya, you brought up from destruction my life. In other words, you saved me, you had me swallowed by the fish. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God. When my soul was folded upon me, which means I thought I was about to die, as Hashem Zochartia, I remembered Hashem. And my prayer came to you to your holy sanctuary. And now he moves into a statement about others and about himself. Mishamrim Havle Shav, those who guarded or protected or were interested in the, what is it, the futility, the false futility. Chasdam Ya'azovu, they will leave their chesed. Chesed means kindness, those that do kindness to them. Rashi explains, this is a reference to the sailors. The sailors that we spoke about last week, who remember all became gerim. They all converted after they saw what happened to Yonah. Those who had been involved in futility, in idolatry, all those sailors, chasdam ya'azovu, that which they thought was giving them kindness, which means their deities, ya'azovu, they forsook them. Sounds like old English. They forsook them. So they left though that falsehood. Vani and I, the kol toda ez bechalach, with the sound of thanksgiving, I will bring sacrifices to you. In other words, now he is saying that if you get me out of here, Hashem, I will bring a karban toda to you, a thanksgiving offering. Ashinadarti ashalema, that which I have sworn, that which I have vowed, I will pay. I will bring the karban. Yeshua Salah Hashem, salvation from Hashem. This is a reference to the fact that the Chazal say, Arba Tzrichim Laho, those four types of people need to give thanksgiving. There are four types of people who need to bring a karban toda, a thanksgiving offering. And those four are those, a person who is sick, deathly ill, and gets better. That's one. One who is in jail and gets out. One who is in the desert and gets out of the desert. And finally, Yardei Hayam, those who go into the ocean and come out. That's the, and that is where the bracha of benching Gomel that men do today, that comes from these Arba Tzrichim L'Hodos, the four that are required to thank Hashem. It comes from, this is one of them, it really comes from a pasuk in Tehillim, which goes through all four, but this, Kol Toda Ez Bechalach, I'm going to bring a carbon Toda to you, Hashem. Why a Thanksgiving offering? Because he was in the ocean, and he says, I'm going to get out of the ocean. And then, of course, Vayam Hashem Ladag, Hashem speaks to the fish, Vayakeh Siona El Hayabashan, he spits Yonah onto the dry land. Yonah davens, and he is saved when he davens to Hashem. The Gemara says in Maseches Erevin that there are three tzuzot. There are three entrances to Gehenna. How'd you know that?
She's been
to Gemara. There's three entrances to Gehenna. One is in the Midbar, in the wilderness. That's where they learn it from Korach, because Korach went down to Gehenna from there. One is in Yerushalayim, of all places, and one is in the ocean. Where do we know that there's an entrance to Gehenna in the ocean? Because it says back in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Mibeten Sheol, from the depths of the innards of the grave, of the Sheol. Sheol, which means the grave, the deep, deep places, is taken to mean Gehenna. Yonah sees the entrance of Gehenna, which is located in the ocean, one of the three. And there's one in the wilderness and one in Yerushalayim. Now, that's what the Gemara says. The various Mefarshim, various commentaries ask, there's only three entrances to Gehenna? What does that mean? First of all, what does it mean to have an entrance to Gehenna? Does that mean that a person, if they would choose to do so, which would be crazy, could find the doorway to Gehenna and walk in? Isn't Gehenna a place that is reserved for punishment of some sort if a person doesn't do the proper thing in this world, and it's some kind of a spiritual thing? What does it mean, a doorway to Gehenna? Clearly, when the Gemara says there's three entrances to Gehenna, the Gemara means to say that there are three primary ways that people can, God forbid, end up in Gehenna. We know that a person ends up being punished after they pass away, if they have not done teshuva in this world, and if they have done averos and they've not done what they're supposed to do. But we understand that the punishment after death is a purification process to bring a person to a point where they can then go to Olam Haba without any blemish on their record. But then, God forbid, there are those who lose their place in the next world, and then Gehenna is the only recourse. Gehenna has three entrances. There are three ways that a person could end up there. And they are represented by the ocean, the Midbar, the wilderness, and by Yerushalayim. We need to understand what are these three things and what do they represent, and that will then help us understand why it is that Yonah is introduced to the entrance of Gehenna in the ocean, which really goes back to the fundamental question of why is Yonah being punished in the ocean? What's the ocean got to do with Yonah? We know that Yonah ran away to the boat, and the boat was under a storm, and therefore he was thrown into the ocean. I understand that. So Yonah put himself in the middle of the ocean. But if Hashem wanted Yonah to learn a lesson, he didn't have to do it in the ocean. He could have had Yonah catapulted out of the ocean into some sort of a feather bed in the middle of the desert, and he could have ended up in the desert for 3 days and three nights before he davened. It didn't have to be in the ocean. Hashem wanted Yonah in the ocean because somehow what Yonah's lesson has to do with the ocean and has to do with the entrance to Gehenna in the ocean. And when we read about Yonah on Yom Kippur, we are being introduced to the entrance of Gehenna in the ocean. What's the ocean and the other three? What are these three things? The ocean, the Midbar, the wilderness, and Yerushalayim. Now, what I'm about to tell you is not the only way of understanding this. This is the way that I understand it. I think it is a valid understanding of it. Of course, there can be other ways, and you can come up with your own. But this is the suggestion that I would make. The Mishnah says, and we're all aware of this Mishnah, famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, "Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed." The world stands on three things: al Torah, v'al avoda, v'al gmilus chasadim. Torah, avoda. Torah means the study of Torah. Avoda means the service of Hashem, which either means serving in the Beis Hamikdash or davening. And gmilus chasadim, of course, means doing kindness. We know that doing kindness. Now we know that our three avos, our three patriarchs, represent these three things in reverse order. Avraham is chesed, as we know. Yitzchak represents avoda, service. Yaakov represents Torah. And each of the three, in their own way, were involved in the three things we're about to discuss. Those three are what the world stands on. If a person, God forbid, not just violates, but completely neglects, if he goes against any of these three, then that would be an entrance to Gehenna. Doing these three things is how the world stands. If one undermines any of these three things, that is an entrance to Gehenna. Torah, the Gemara says that a person can only be konet Torah, can only acquire Torah by going to the Midbar, by going to the wilderness, away from being involved in this world. A person has to get away from worldly things in order to acquire Torah. Hashem took the Jewish people to the Midbar, the Gemara says, to the wilderness. Har Sinai, where we got the Torah, is not in a settled place. It's in a place which is barren, which cannot sustain life. In order to attain Torah, a person has to get away from worldly things in order to acquire Torah. Torah is acquired in the Midbar. In addition, the Midbar represents anava, it represents humility. Since it's barren, it doesn't sustain life, etc. And the most significant characteristic that a person has to have to acquire Torah, as we know from Moshe Rabbeinu, is humility. Moshe being the most humble of all, and that's why he was also the greatest in Torah. That is the Midbar. That represents Torah. Yerushalayim, of course, represents avoda, service. Service means davening, but it also means service in the Beis Hamikdash. When we daven, we are simply replacing that which is done in the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash is in Yerushalayim, and there Yerushalayim represents avoda. So one who undermines Torah is entering the doorway of Gehenna that is in the Midbar. One who undermines avoda is entering the doorway of Gehenna that is in Yerushalayim.
Do we know
what
that is?
Do we know
where it is?
Where it is? No. No, thankfully. I hope there are some Palestinians hovering around there. What about the ocean? The ocean represents gemilus chasadim, kindness. Why does that represent kindness? So, to understand this, one has to understand what water in general represents. The generation of the great flood, the Mabel of Noah, was punished with water. Why water? Because water, an abundance of water, represents the drives, the physical drives of this world, taiva. Water, even though it's true, you can argue with me, you can say, well, water also represents Torah, and that's true, it does. But the punishment of water represents taiva, those who are involved in taiva, in their worldly pleasures, worldly pursuits, they are punished with water. That you find consistently throughout Tanakh. And that would be the generation of Noach. Their sin was primarily immorality and theft. It was the worldly drives that they were after, and they were punished with water. Chesed is something that we do, but chesed is something which cannot be done by somebody who does not appreciate the drives of this world. Let's think about that for a moment. Someone who wants to do chesed for someone else, a kindness for somebody else. In order for me to do kindness for you, I have to perceive what it is that you need. I have to perceive what it is that you're lacking. I can't perceive that if I don't appreciate what it is that people want and need. And what people want and need are usually physical things. I can't appreciate what it is. If you're hungry and need food, but to me food is irrelevant, I can't appreciate that you need food. For me to appreciate that you need food, I have to know what hunger is. For me to appreciate that a person needs financial assistance, I have to know what it means to have and need money. A person to do chesed has to understand and appreciate what it means to be in this world. A person who is living in a totally spiritual realm, it's very difficult to do chesed. Now we know that the great ones amongst our people, men and women, who have reached great spiritual heights, but have done so through this world. And therefore they've been great Baalei Chesed. They've done great Chesed as well. Because they're not just living there with their head in the clouds. They also understand what goes on in this world. They're human beings. They never lost sight of the fact that they're human beings. And have always been empathetic and understanding of other people. And that's why our great ones don't just move off in a spiritual way. They also are very much involved with Chesed. Because they fully understand what it means to be in this world and what it means to have troubles and tribulations. One way to express it is that the drives that we have, they can be used in a positive way. Every drive that we have can be used in a positive way, at the very least, to perceive what someone else is going through. A person who takes the drives of this world and misuses them, they are misusing what should be chesed. In other words, instead of being focused on the other, they're being focused on their own drives. They've become self-centered. Where chesed is to be selfless and to be focused on others, when one is shakua, is embedded in taiva, in their physical drives, they are completely self-centered. They can think of no one but themselves, fulfilling my needs. I'm hungry, I want to eat now. I don't care about anybody else because I want. That is the opposite of chesed. The entrance to Gehenna that is located in the ocean is the one who undermines chesed. So what does it have to do with Yonah? What is Yonah doing in the ocean? Yonah, what did he do? I mean, he wasn't mean to people, unless you say the fact that he didn't go to Nineveh was being mean to those people. But remember, he was doing it in order to be empathetic to the Jewish people. He wasn't trying to hurt the Jewish people. So in what way is this relevant to Yonah?
Well, he was for the Jewish people, but had to deal with the...
Well, we don't find that he was disdainful, and we don't find. We find that he had an intense love for the Jewish people and did not want to see them get hurt.
But I think he was disdainful of the people in
Israel. It doesn't say he was disdainful. We don't find that. We don't find any statement that he was disdainful of them.
I don't think that it's found, but I think that it's implied.
Perhaps.
Well, maybe the chesed that he didn't do for Jewish people, he didn't perceive that they could do tshuva and to listen to his message, assuming that he would go to them and tell them they would ignore him. So had he given the opportunity to hear his word and had the opportunity to do tshuva, that would be a greater chesed as well.
Okay. So you're both touching on very, very important points. And this is a point which we cannot develop fully right now until we see the end of the book of Yonah. The end of the book of Yonah, which is the ultimate lesson that Hashem is coming to teach Yonah, when we get to the very, very end, it's a very difficult lesson to perceive just by reading the verses. And we will get there, Mirz Hashem. But for now, let's leave it at this. Yonah was misusing chesed. He was coming from chesed. He was trying to do kindness to the Jewish people. But it was a misplaced kindness. It was not the will of Hashem. He was trying to be kind. That was his, that was what he was, what was his motivation. His motivation was, I want to protect the Jewish people. That way he was off, he wasn't being self-centered. It was totally for another person, for the people. That wasn't what he was about. But it was a chesed that was not Hashem's will. And chesed that is not Hashem's will is not chesed. It is not chesed to be kind to another person when it is not Hashem's will. The purpose of chesed is to even to be nice to other people and do for other people is because Hashem told us to do it. It's not because we decided to do it, it's because Hashem decided to do it. The Gemara says, and although this is a difficult thing to accept for a lot of people, but one has to understand, the Gemara says that you know that it is an obligation, not just a nice thing to do, it is an obligation for us to return lost objects. Was that a true statement? No. It is an obligation to return lost objects to a fellow Jew. It is not an obligation to return lost objects to a non-Jew. That's not true. It is prohibited to return a lost object to a non-Jew.
Why?
Prohibited.
Why?
Because, the Gemara says, if you return a lost object to a non-Jew, then what you're saying is that I'm returning a lost object because it's the right thing to do. Because it's appropriate, because it's moral. And the Gemara says, that is not why you return a lost object. You return a lost object because Hashem said to return a lost object. That's why you return a lost object. Not because it's moral, not because it's right, not because it's good. It's because Hashem said so. And in order to demonstrate that you're doing it because Hashem said so, then you the parameter is to a Jew, not to a non-Jew. Now, one is allowed to return a lost object to a non-Jew if it will engender goodwill between us and the non-Jews, or it will sanctify God's name. It will be a Kiddush Hashem. It is permitted in those circumstances in order to engender goodwill or in order to make Hashem be sanctified in the eyes of the non-Jews. So most of the time you can do it, because most of the time one of those two things is going to happen. But there can be circumstances where it will not happen, where they don't know who you are, they'll never see you, it's all online or over the phone or whatever it is, they don't know, have no idea who you are, then it is actually prohibited to do so. Because we don't do kindness because we think it's right. We do the kindness because Hashem said so. When one does a kindness because if they feel it's right and it's not what Hashem wants, then it's no longer a mitzvah. And it's actually wrong. Yonah here was doing chesed, but it was a chesed that Hashem did not want him to do. Therefore, he is introduced to the entrance of Gehenna that is in the ocean, which is the entrance of Gehenna to the one who is undermining chesed. The man who stands for chesed over here, who is trying to be is magnanimous to his fellow Jews, he's introduced to the doorway of Gehenna for the one who undermines chesed. That is where Yonah finds himself in the ocean.
Does that fall under goodwill? Because, I mean, it can belong to a Jew.
Yeah, but money, there's no mitzvah to return even to a Jew.
Oh.
Because money, there's no way to know whose it is. You're not supposed to return something unless you know you're able to determine whose it is. And if I find an object, I find a ring. I find a ring. Right?
Okay.
So you come to me and say it's your ring. Now, if you can identify some way, without me showing it to you, you can say, you know, it has such and such a marking on it, and it does, so you've proven it's yours, so I return it to you. If you can't identify it, but I don't know whose else it is. I'm not allowed to give it to you because maybe it's somebody else's. Who says it's yours? So I can't give it to you if you can't prove to me it's yours. I'll think I'm being nice, but maybe I'm not being nice. Maybe I'm being mean. Maybe it's somebody else's. It might
be
stealing.
What did you do in that scenario?
So
that's a habitual knack of coming across.
So in that situation, you're obligated to hold on to it until you can find the right owner. Now, that's true when everybody is Jewish, but when you find something on the street where it is most likely owned by a non-Jew, so then, as we said, the mitzvah returning lost object does not apply. So you don't have to pick it up. You don't have to, you know, there's no...
Oh, just
you know,
leave it there?
Right. You don't have to pick it up.
Ring and you want to keep it.
Now, uh-huh. Now
that
if you...
Wrong,
now,
though.
Well, I was saying, so if you would like to make a Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name, by returning it, so you can find out whose it is, and maybe it is a non-Jew, and you'll be able to return it and make a Kiddush Hashem. That's fine. But it's not the mitzvah of returning a lost object. It's the mitzvah of sanctifying God's name. It's a different mitzvah. The mitzvah of returning a lost object is, I find something that belongs to a Jew, and the person can identify that it's theirs, and I return it to them. If no one can identify it, money is the classic unidentifiable object,
right?
Because money changes hands. Even if you write your name on the dollar bill, it means nothing, because you may have spent it. So if I find the dollar bill lying around, it doesn't matter where you are, there's no mitzvah to return it.
What is that called?
It's called sanctifying God's name, because when people see that Jews act in a way that is above the letter of law, you didn't have to return it. So when they see you acting that way, that sanctifies God's name. They say, "Wow, you could have taken it, you could have sold it, you could have whatever it is," and they say, "Wow, this is a people that is a special people. Look what they do."
But
it sanctifies God's name.
They wouldn't necessarily know that she was Jewish. They would know you were Jewish by your appearance.
It's a good thing if you sanctify God's name.
Well,
and if you return it and you say, I found this and I'm a Jew and we believe well, that's what we're going to see. Okay, so you touched on it before and you're right, because the whole lesson over here is going to be Yonah's reaction to the non-Jews. Which is what in the end, that's what Hashem's going to tell him. But it's more subtle than that. We're going to see when we get to the end. It's a very, very important point, and we're working.
It really is important.
Yes, and we're working towards that. Yes, but we're not ready for it. We haven't seen enough of the story yet. Oh, you want to know about that?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do this real quick. But we've talked about this before. When a person passes away, so we say Kaddish for 11 months, and that's because if a person is a tzaddik, they're a righteous person, then they will ultimately go on to Gan Eden, to the place where the souls go until the time of Tchias HaMeis, until the time of the resurrection of the dead. But they have to, Hashem has to deal with their averos that they did not yet do teshuvah for, and they are cleansed during some of that time, maybe a little bit of time, maybe a lot of time, but they are cleansed during that time. That is what Kaddish is being said for, in order to elevate the person. Yeah, it goes to Gan Eden, where it is a nice place to be, but it's not the ultimate place. The ultimate place is Tchias HaMeisim, is Olam Haba. Resurrection of the dead and Olam Haba is the same thing.
All the souls now that have passed on are in Gan Eden?
That's right. That's what Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzer, the Ramchal, writes.
How can are all these souls in Gan Eden around Hashem?
Well, I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means. I don't know where Gan Eden is. This is already. I can only parrot what he says. I can.
How can you elevate people that don't have family to try to do chesed and do things in order to elevate them?
You mean those who passed away?
If someone passes away,
you can, any mitzvah that you do on their behalf, like giving tzedakah, elevates their soul. That's why at Yizkor, the custom is to give tzedakah, because it elevates the soul of those who passed away. Anything done on their behalf.
But is there a way of doing that for people you don't even know?
You can. There was a program once about studying Torah on behalf of the children who were killed in the Holocaust. Okay. My father, I remember, was doing that for a long time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.